Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Nicole Hannah-Jones dropped a piece, you know, about Africans here in this in America. And she has come under fire for some of the claims that she's making. And it's called the 1619 Project. And what's very interesting about the 1619 Project, that whole date itself is in some ways connected with perhaps the, she wants to argue, should be a pivotal date in the founding, or at least maybe that's the point where we start talking about this whole idea of American democracy. I think that's part of a one piece of her thesis that she has put out there. And you and I are going to talk about that, but let me tell you something. I got somebody on the radio who, in fact, is a trained Africana studies professor at Morehouse College here in Atlanta, and he's going to help us work through this. I am so excited to have my brother, Dr. Samuel Livingston, who, yeah, let's give him a big hand clap, because he is the director of the Africana Studies program at Morehouse College. And let me tell you something, the thing that, there's so many things about him that is just absolutely overwhelming. First of all, let me tell you something, he is a brother. I'm telling you, he is with the people, he is with the revolution, he is with us, and he believes in advocating for, you know, circumstances and for black people. I love that. He's a professionally, formally trained, bro. He got a real PhD, y'all. He ain't got a YouTube PhD. He got a real one. Oh, I hope that don't sound like I'm being a little highfalutin now, but I just got to say that, man. Sam, I got to put that out there, because Doc, you studied at Temple.
Hey, I'm honored to be here with you.
Man, Temple is serious. That's a serious university. In some ways, the graduate program at Temple with Ashanti, I believe that would
Malefius,
be his.
Dr. Malefius Ashanti.
Yeah, yeah. Temple has put out so many people who are really trained to handle this black studies and Africana studies kind of conversation. I'm glad that you're here, Sam. You've seen the 1619 Project. Boy, it's a lot to be said about what Nicole Hannah-Jones is doing. First of all, as an Africana studies professor, what's your take on that 1619 Project?
Again, Dr. Bennett, my brother Harold.
Man, yeah, Harold is fine. Again, that's cool. Just
that's
call.
Cool. Man, I'm so honored to be here with you. But I think it's really an important project, and I salute the efforts of Ms. Nicole Hannah-Jones, the journalist with the New York Times, who really, through just her grit and determination, determined to tell this story of the real roots of America. So I'm very happy that has come out. But, you know, we've had some conversations. I'm going to just say that I think that it doesn't go far enough, because, you know, a part of the little bit of research that I do shows that 1619 is not our beginning of our history. The beginnings of our history is at least in America. And I'm an Afrocentrist,
right.
So I'm
right.
very clear in that our history actually begins on the African continent. Our history begins in freedom.
Hold on, Sam. Let me ask you this. Back to conversation for a minute. Help us understand, when you say you're an Afrocentrist, what do you mean by Afrocentrist and perhaps Afrocentricity?
Well, to be more clear, I'm an African-centered scholar.
Okay.
That means that I place the agency of African people at the center of what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
And when I can't do that, I struggle to tell the story of African people as much as we can. So in the period that actually begins the real history of African Americans in 1526, you know, I'm at pains because I couldn't find a single primary source document by one of the 100 Africans who engaged in a slave rebellion in 1526. So that I'm used to working with primary sources that come from African people. And to me, that's a primary defining aspect of what it means to be an African-centered scholar, that you're trying to tell the story of African people, that you're advocating on behalf of African people and trying to tell what quite often winds up being a buried truth and bringing that to light.
Wow. So it sounds then that you're saying, and you're inviting the community to think about maybe walking the conversation back in that maybe 16-19 might not be the jumping, the starting point for talking about the history of black folk here. You're saying 1526 mm-hmm. is a pivotal date. And I will tell you, I had not heard about 1526 until I spoke with you. So if I'm hearing you correctly, then you're saying then that perhaps there are some other events that should be talked about and some other dates that should be thrown out and should be considered events, dates, people. We want to start talking about the black presence here on this North American continent.
Absolutely.
So my question, here's what I'm going to do when we come back shortly. I'm going to want you to talk about what are some of those dates in addition to the 1526 date. What are some of those other dates and some of the other people and events that are important for understanding black folk mm-hmm. here in America? And the thing I want to push you on, Sam, is to even when you talk about those dates, tell us why. Tell us why those dates are critical.
Right.
And not only why those dates are critical, but, you know, what can we do to make sure that our communities are even more aware of those dates? And that's important because, you know, I was educated in the public school system in North Carolina, and I really didn't hear a lot about black people, mm-hmm. black dates, and black until I went to North Carolina A&T. That was the first place I started running into this type of thing. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, and it was just mind-boggling. So I thank God for that education. And I'm thankful for Morehouse, and I'm thankful for what you're doing at Morehouse to help our young men understand these dates and understand how critical they are. I want to ask, I want to give you 1 minute before we go to our next break. What would you say about this 1619 project to kind of set us up for what you're going to say right after the break?
Key thing I would say behind every date are people.
Yeah.
And there's a human story behind every single date. And we're going to try to tell that story, flesh that out a little bit more, because I think that can get lost. We should always remember that if we begin in 1619, if we choose to begin there, we may be excluding hundreds of other people, hundreds of other African ancestors who were here on American shores.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to disrespect the 20 or so Africans who were brought in 1619, but we have to tell the full story, and we have the access to the full story, so we owe that to our ancestors to tell that full story and bring that before our children, especially in these schools and everything.
All right, you heard it. You heard it from Dr. Sam Livingston. We're going to get at it on the other side of the break, y'all. News and Talk Radio 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Let me go to Latif. Hello, Latif. How you doing?
Good morning. How you doing there?
I'm good. First of all, you're a first time caller, right?
Yeah, on this program. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. That's good. I'm gonna show you some first time caller love. I'm gonna show you a little love there. Thank you, brother. Hey, man, what's on your mind?
Well, to me, this is a very important topic that you're talking about, and I feel kind of privileged to be listening to with the guest that you have there today. I think you said one of the gentlemen is from teachers at one of the colleges.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, his name is Dr. Sam Livingston. Go ahead. He's sitting right here. You can talk to him.
Hey, brother. Right, right. How you doing?
All right. So I just wanted to kind of hear your perspective on this, maybe with the other gentlemen as well, because I think that these I don't know too much about this project 1619. I'm trying to get more information about it now, but these kind of topics to me are very important when it comes to our people, because they need to understand the history all behind what we have faced since we have been in this country and the importance of it. When we talk about reparations and I listen to people talk about reparations, it seems that there's this attitude of not really an important attitude as far as us having reparations from the people who are supposed to be representing us.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear stuff like this, it makes me feel good because we need to understand all the struggles that our people have faced since we've been here. When the program was first coming on, I heard the gentleman make reference to certain people and things, events that happened in the month of August.
Yes.
And the importance of it. And it was one thing that he said I was just a little confused about, and I was just wondering, what do you teach in your curriculum about? It was a mention made of President Obama.
Okay.
Was put in that group. Now, I look at President Obama as being a successful black man who has done good for black people, you know, as a black man, but I don't see him as being as a champion for black people. So I wanted to know if you could comment on that.
Okay, there's a lot. Sam, I'm going to let you respond first of all. He wanted to know, he wanted to talk, you know, what's your take on the 1619 Project, and then I'll respond to what I was talking about with Obama in August of 2008.
Oh, okay. Brother Latif, thank you for the question. When it comes to the 1619 Project, I think it's important that we have that type of material placed in the curriculum. And if we think about, like, the public ear, you know, what's on the radio, what's on the TV, and what's on what we teach in our classes as a curriculum, it's important to have these kind of discussion points. So I think it's really important that we tell that story. What my reservation about the 1619 Project is that it only tells a small part of that story, and it fragments our history even during enslavement, because 93 years before 1619, there were 100 Africans who were brought to Georgia and South Carolina who started a slave rebellion and who initiated the beginning of what would become the Gullah and Geechee culture down in that region. So how can we leave them out? I think that's just a very, very important piece. What I appreciate about what Ms. Nicole Hannah-Jones has said, the way that she uses language, she says that this is the beginning of the enslaved African history in British North America. So I definitely agree with that. And I think it's very important that we begin to take our history seriously and we insist upon accuracy and that we don't say that this is the beginning of African-American history. It is not the beginning of African history in America or African-American history. It is the beginning of the enslaved African history in British North America. So I think that's important. I have a lot more to say, Brother Latif, especially one thing I want to introduce to y'all and a little seed I want to plant in the ear of the community is to raise a question. Well, who were these 20 Africans? Who were these 20 enslaved Africans who actually were indentured servants? But that's something that I'm sure that me and Brother Harold are going to talk about and bring out in a little bit, that they were indentured servants, but they were already being treated like enslaved people in 1619. So, you know, that whole idea about, you know, well, they started out equal. No, definitely not. They were actually traded for food. And if you're traded for food, to me, that suggests that you're basically chattel, or at least being looked at as chattel. So the technicality is that they were indentured servants, but they were actually enslaved people too. But I think it's really important to bring out points like this and projects like this. So, you know, I hope that it starts a bigger conversation within the African, within the whole community here in America, around the world too.
Now, well, John, Latif, is there anything you wanted to respond to Sam on?
No, I'm
going to respond to the other part.
No, I appreciate the history and the importance of it,
Okay.
Point that he's bringing out. It's very helpful to me.
All right, great. Now, let me see if I can get to this in 1 minute because we actually getting ready to have a break, and I want to respond thoroughly to your question. Well, let me tell you what I was getting at. I was talking about President Obama simply as a non-white black man receiving the nomination by the Democratic Party to be the candidate that they were running for the president or the presidency of the United States. And this happened in August of 2008. What's very interesting about it, my friend Latif, it happens probably almost 45 years to the date after the March on Washington. The March on Washington occurred in August of 1963. I'm thinking August 28th. That's what I'm thinking. Check me out, man. I might be wrong, but I'm thinking August 28th was when that occurred. Barack Obama receives the nomination to be the president of the United States August 27th.
Right.
2008. Okay. So almost, my friend, almost 45 right. years today. Well, you know what? I got to go. That music means I got to go to a break.
All right. Can
I,
well,
no. I'll talk about it on the other side. Just keep listening, man. Thank you so much for calling.
All right.
Boy, Latif had a great question. Listen, I'll finish this on the other side. News and Talk Radio 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Dr. Bennett here, and we're talking about that 1619 project. Before the break, I was actually casting light or saying a little bit more about what I was talking about when I mentioned Barack Obama in 2008, in August of 2008, receiving the nomination to be the Democratic candidate for the presidency of the United States. I thought that that should be listed among significant events for Black Americans because, you know, that was a first. We had not had a black candidate win that nomination, y'all, and I just wanted to put that out there. Now, I was not in any kind of way trying to comment on you know, whether or not his presidency benefited Black folk. Because I will say this, I do think some of his policies did help us. Now, I'm not so sure. Matter of fact, I think that we're making a mistake to totally write off his presidency as being of no use to Black folk. But there was some good that came out of his work. Now, but it's just that I wanted to show how there must be something in the water. August seems to be a pretty important month for us, and that's kind of what I was using to frame the whole conversation. 1619 Project talks then again about something that happened in August 1619, about a group of enslaved Africans who were taken. And Sam and I had this conversation. I said, well, I don't know if we should call them indentured servants. And I'm kind of stuck on calling them slaves. And so Sam and I was going back and forth about that. And, you know, you can push him on it and see how you think that conversation ought to go. But that's what that's about. We got a lot going on in our community, but that 1619 Project is talking about essentially it's making a claim that in so many ways this whole system we have in America with economics, and you're talking about medical apartheid, and you're talking about a lot of kind of notions about white supremacy, that a lot of that grounds itself in that 1619 event. That's kind of what's running through that piece there. It was in the New York Times. I think it was an insert in the New York Times maybe the beginning of last month. I'm thinking that's when it was. But that's what we're talking about. And I got Sam Livingston here with me, and we want to chop it up with you and want to know what you think. 404-892-2703 is a number. I'm going to go to the lines. I got Brother Todd on line 4. Go ahead, Todd.
Man, Harold. What's up? You not? I really wanted to hear Sam say something more before you brought me on, man.
Oh, well, what you want to hear?
I want to hear the back and forth a little bit before I make.
I tell you what I'll do. If that's cool with you, I'm gonna put you back on hold.
I appreciate that.
All right, hold on, Todd. Let me see. Make sure I don't hang up. You know I don't know how to work all these buttons. Sean, I did the right thing, right? What you say? Watch out, Bennett. All right. So here is the deal. One of the things Sam and I was talking about was, again, first of all, some of those other dates, you know, that are very, very important for appreciating our story. And Sam had mentioned a date that happened, was it 1826, 1825?
1526
was about the slave. All right. And for some reason, I thought you had mentioned another date in the 19th century that I had not talked about. Mm-hmm. That was an important date. But what that does, though, it kind of leads me to this issue, though, on the one hand. First of all, let me go ahead so Todd will know what I'm talking about. And you mentioned this earlier in your comments that you and I was talking about this issue about, I guess, the correct category in which to place these Africans who were brought over to Virginia in the 17th century, 1619. I was like, no, because I had heard them talked about as indentured servants. And I'm like, I don't understand why they would be called indentured servants. I'm thinking about the term that I thought was apropos, was called them straight up slaves, because I'm saying, how can they be talked about as indentured servants? Because does that imply that they entered a contract knowingly, willfully to exchange their labor for some goods and services on the back end? And I'm like, well, in order for them to do that, So you mean to tell me coming from someplace in West Africa in the 17th century, they was able to enter a contract perhaps with the Portuguese or the Dutch. So they were speaking Portuguese. They were speaking Dutch. They were able to read. You know, they understood what the exchange was going to be about. They understood terms of service. They understood what America. It seemed like those were the kinds of things that would be required in order to have some kind of understanding of to enter an agreement to work for somebody for a period. And that's what I was thinking an indentured servant meant. So I'm thinking, in light of what happened, maybe that's the wrong term to use.
Well,
but you responded.
Yeah, I responded. And this is why I love working with this brother and being on the air. And I have to say, this is my first time being on the radio because he's a critical thinker. And he forces me to make sure, forces all of us, especially students, to think clearly. So you're absolutely right, Harold. And this is, we got to be very clear. They were technically indentured servants. But the fact that, according to the few historical records that we have, these people were traded for food. That is not the classic way that you have indentured servitude entering. Just like, as you mentioned, people would actually request to enter into indentures, and then they had a chance to work those indentures off for a period of time, whether that be 5 years, 10 years, however, whatever that term was. So we should be very clear that even though these people might have been brought in technically as indentured servants, that they were almost treated from Jump Street as enslaved people. But I want to back up briefly.
Go ahead, my
for
friend.
One second.
Go ahead.
And I want to do something for these 20 Africans. I want us to make sure and be clear so we can be clear. These were 20 Africans who were from the nation or from the area of Angola and possibly some of them from Congo. According to the research of folks like Dr. Rick Murphy, John Thornton, Ira Berlin, and other folks like that, these people are actually highly skilled. They came in and they were actually able to not just work off their indentures, but to in many ways, the British took advantage of their skills that they brought with them from Africa in animal husbandry, in agriculture, in carpentry, in a number of different areas, not to mention their linguistic skills, which you picked up on, Harold. These people actually spoke, in addition to the languages that they might have spoken, which could include Kikongo. It could have included maybe the Ovimbundu language. It could have included a number of other African languages. But they also spoke Portuguese because they were dealing with the Portuguese since the 1450s, since the 1440s. So these folks actually were worldly in their worldview.
All right. Let me do this, Sam. I got to go to a break. When we come back, I want you to keep on talking about these 20 Africans, because I want to know how did the British get their hands on them.
Okay.
You ready to talk about that?
Oh, we can go.
All right. We're going to talk about that. Got to go to a break, y'all. Ah, running out of time already. Oh, man. News and Talk Radio 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Sam, keep on telling us about those 20 Africans. And you can even respond about, you can say something about Newt's take on the whole thing.
I'll try not to give Newt too much time because he needs to go back, and I'm going to hit him with a couple of books inside his head that he needs to definitely read, because it definitely, the American Revolution was about slavery, and it's very clear, and that's not just from African authors, that's from European authors as well. But going back to what we need to be doing, giving respect to these 20 Africans, we know that they were from the city of Luanda in Angola, which was the capital of the new Portuguese colony that was there. And the Portuguese were basically trying to devastate this city because the people of Luanda had begun to resist the Portuguese slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, if you could get rid of the leaders, the social leaders in society, then you could actually break the back of that resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other side of the Atlantic, when these Africans show up in August of 1619, we know that they, like we said, they are actually people of substance, and they begin to actually make their mark in society. One of the Africans who was enslaved was named Anthony the Angolan, and we know of Anthony the Angolan. In fact, you can kind of compare the story of the tension between this indentured servitude status of the Africans and this enslaved status of the Africans, comparing Anthony the Angolan with John Punch.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony the Angolan is able to work off his indentures. He actually has whites and blacks who work for him, and he pays for their indentures once he works off his, and he is able to buy or to amass an estate of about 250 acres of land, if not more. Now, we know that. So, but you contrast Anthony the Angolan with John Punch. John Punch, not sure of his ethnicity, but he was an indentured servant.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1640, we know that John Punch tried to run away from his indentured servitude. So even if he was an indentured servant, the conditions couldn't have been that good if he was trying to run away. He
That's
runs
true.
Away with a Scotsman and an Irishman. And the essentially, all three of them are caught. But the Scotsman and Irishman, they are given an extension of their terms of service, maybe another 5 or 10 years, and mm-hmm. then they're whipped. John Punch was given the sentence of servitude durante vita, slavery mm-hmm. for the rest of his natural life. And that begins that's the very first time an African person was given a sentence of slavery for the rest of their lives. Now, John Punch probably wasn't amongst those first 20, but he had to have been brought in at some point in time. So it's a complex story, but these folks, they deserve dignity. You know, for that matter, what Newt Gingrich is saying ignores completely the story of Somerset. There's a man, an enslaved African man named Somerset, who was enslaved by an Irishman, an Englishman, in Virginia, and he's taken back to England, and he runs away once he gets to London.
Mm-hmm.
Somerset saw that thriving African community in London, and he said, okay, I'm gone. And eventually his owner, the man who used to own him, brings the court case to the House of Lords, and it makes its way up to the House of Lords. Anyway, long story short, the Chief Justice, Lord Mansfield, rules on behalf of the African Somerset in 1773, if I'm clear on that date. I can double-check the date. But the importance of that ruling is that it basically says, for the British, they saw a problem with slavery. And the American revolutionaries, the so-called founding fathers, they read this and they said, oh, these folks are actually coming after our slaves.
Well, see, that's something I wanted you to talk about, because
the British were coming after our
slaves. I have, from some of the readings I have done, I have run across this kind of reporting, shall I say fact-taking, that said that Britain was about to do something about the whole issue of enslaving Africans, and that they were having some real serious moral kinds of questions about whether or not it was the right thing to do, and that these colonists heard that Britain was about to move towards abolishing or making it illegal, or somehow or another, Britain wasn't supporting it. So the colonists decide they were going to find a way to break off from Britain, because they didn't want them coming, you know, kind of shutting down a system, as Nicole Hannah-Jones says, when she's talking about, you know, it wasn't as full-blown then as it got in the 19th century. But clearly, you're talking about slaves, Thomas Jefferson, those guys. You're talking about a revenue engine,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, you know, yep. with the cotton, with the tobacco, with the sugar, that sugar cane.
Absolutely.
You know, and the whole financial universe that created. And so I have heard that Britain was about to move. And so the colonists decided, no, you about to get in our pockets.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it wasn't just about, which is ironic to me, taxation without representation.
Mm-hmm.
But you got slaves.
Yeah.
I mean, you having a problem with somebody not listening to your voice and not including your voice in a certain political process. But you got slaves.
Exactly. That's the contradiction, the fundamental contradiction in American history. They benefited from slavery, but don't want to deal with the historical reckoning of what slavery has done to and for this country.
I think I'm going to have to just breathe on that one.
Right.
You know what, y'all? 448-9227-03 is the number. I'm going to go to the lines when I come back. Wow. Sam is laying it down. He's dropping it. He's laying it down. News and Talk Radio 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.